Welcome to our first podcast by the Black Country Area Healthcare Branch from Unite the Union. This podcast was recorded on November 24 with an emphasis on anti-racism. Hopefully you'll enjoy it.
Over to you, Paul. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Neil. Thanks, Chris, for inviting me to your branch meeting. I know some of you, so it's really nice to see. It's been a while. And today, really, I've been my capacity as, although I still work in the health sector and the NHS. Today, I just want to kind of talk to you in my capacity as being a community campaigner within Dudley and also an anti-racist. And you'll probably agree in terms of over what happened in the summer and what's happening over the weekend and what's happening globally, that there's a cause for concern of the far right, increase of far right. So really today, I'm going to reflect on my personal journey as being a community campaigner and anti-racist, particularly from around 1999 to 2000, up until about 2013-14, of what I was involved in, you know, where I started my journey. So I'll begin, really. I think it's important to start off by who I am, who's Paul. Local lad, born and bred in Dudley. What did I say? Yeah, no, I have moved out of Dudley, but then it draws you back in. So born and bred in Dudley, I'm of a South Asian heritage, so Punjabi, Indian and Sikh. I'm a third generation immigrant, and my paternal grandfather arrived in Dudley, well, in England in 1963 from the Punjab and moved to Walsall, where he worked in a local foundry for many years. My grandfather was actually initially born in Lahore before the partition, 1947. And was then moved. Family moved over across to the India, so the Punjab side. And my family, so my father and his siblings, my uncles and aunts, then moved, and my grandmother moved over to England a few years later. And in 1971, my family moved to Dudley, and I was born in Burton Road Hospital. I don't know if any of you remember Burton Road Hospital. I was born there in 1978. I think it's the ambulance station now, but it was a hospital for many, many years. And I've got lived experience of racism. I think I first encountered racism when I was about seven, and that would have been around 1985. I still remember it, walking through the town with my mum. It was a Saturday, because every Saturday we'd go shopping. It was a sunny day, walking through the town. As we got shopping, we were walking past the fountain, which I believe is still there. And there's a group I can't remember if they're young or old. I can vaguely remember that they were wearing leather jackets and boots. You know, obviously now knowing that they were Doc Martens. And they shouted out the word, and I might use offensive words today, so I do apologize in advance. You know, it is an emotive subject, where they were shouting out, "Packy, Packy, go home, Packy, effing Packy." And I didn't really understand why they were saying that. And they spat out my mum, and she got a handkerchief, wiped her face. We walked. She told me to look down, carry on walking. You know, it's nothing. Don't worry about it. When I got home, which was about 10 minutes after, I spoke to my mum again, and she said, "Oh, don't worry about it. It's nothing. These things happen." But then I spoke to my granddad, and my grandfather actually started to begin to a 7-year-old explaining that, you know, we're different to some people. We've got different color of skin, and some people don't like difference. So, you know, you'll grow up, you know, you need to tolerate. I didn't know what tolerate meant then, but you know, these things will happen. You got to basically be strong, and we'll get over this. So I was at the age of seven, but then I would hear terminology in playground as well, and I wasn't too sure what it meant. So I think it was around when I was 10, around 1988, where I began to become really curious as to why was there such hostility to people of colour. So that started asking my grandfather, who was a wealth of knowledge. So like I said, I started becoming very inquisitive, and my grandfather then started telling me about the National Front movement, which were obviously marching across the country. And I don't know if any of you were, we had some race riots in Dudley back in 1962 in the summer. So where there was a wave of racially charged violence towards the black community and the South Asian community around Cates Hill. And that was caused by, there was a pub there, I don't know if it's there anymore, well, but I think a black gentleman accidentally drank out of a white gentleman's pint, which caused havoc. And then after that, in 1962, in that summer, there was a week long of violence on the streets. So, yeah, so then I began to kind of be made a bit more aware of what was happening. I don't know if you've heard of the Indian Workers Association, but in 1965, my uncles were involved in the Indian Workers Association, which is a union movement, again, tackling racism within the factories, the foundries and the workplace, where a lot of racism happened, unfair treatment. And you'll see here, Malcolm X visited Marshall Street in 1965, and the Indian Works Association were actually the ones who sponsored Malcolm X. He actually came to visit to kind of stand in solidarity, because at the time it was during, within Smethwick, there was a hotbed of racial tensions. And there was an election campaign which looked at issues around colour bans, discrimination. You may recall or seen some of the signs of windows, no blacks, no Irish, no dogs. And, you know, that was prevalent in Smethwick at the time. There was campaigns that white residents were campaigning the council not to give black or Asian residents houses, affordable social housing at the time. So there was loads of racial tensions. But Malcolm X, because of what was happening in Birmingham, Alabama, the racist, the far right there, he wanted to see what was happening in Birmingham here and come in solidarity. So I learned a lot. And then I learned about Enoch Powell, a speech, Rivers of Blood, in 1968, how he criticized and targeted immigrants. And he was an MP in Wolverhampton, not far from here. And then obviously everything else was going on around the country. My grandfather himself experienced racism. He when he used to go to his local pub or local shop, you know, they would refuse to take change or money from his hand. They would slam it on the counter and they would give him back on the counter. And actually, particular time, they would tell him to sit in a corner where actually I think one of the pubs there, the dogs would usually sit in that room, and it was soiled. So he was barred from sitting in the bar area because of his colour of his skin. So I think that can go on and on and on around. And that's really, this is what's really shaped me of what I do in the kind of equalities movement. This is, you know, it's prevalent of, you know, my values. So I thought I won't go through this in great detail because I want to share with you what we did to counter the far right from around 99 up until 2014. You know, the narratives of far right and the prevalence of far right have been around since the 1920s. And obviously throughout the 2010s and 2020s, it's increased. And it's around that kind of street movement violence. Well, I've come on the BNP and they try to get electoral gains, but it's around, you know, the far right exhibit a collective sense of persecution and presenting themselves as victims of social oppression. And that's what, and you'll see some of the narratives around targeting monitored groups, linking them to criminality, questioning their intelligence. There's a demographic threat around immigration, the rates of births, you know, there's anti-Muslim narratives where the threat posed by Muslim immigration, Islamification, Tommy Robertson and a few others would call this. There's anti-elite narratives. So, you know, the current political and social leadership bears a responsibility on the current crisis and issues. And obviously there's issues around historical revisionism, that's around, you know, an example of that is the Holocaust denial, the BNP, the National Front, the EDL, or, you know, those messages that the issues around denying of the Holocaust. And then there's that kind of neo-Nazism, which is that symbolic rhetoric, ideology of Nazism and even neo-Nazism. There are many far-right groups, but I'm going to focus on the British National Party, National Front and English Defence League, because I was directly involved in counteracting, kind of uniting the fight against these particular groups. When we look at the BNP, you know, we all remember the horrific murder of Stephen Lawrence in 1993. And, you know, still there's, you know, there's still justice hasn't been done, but that, you know, that, but coming to the BNP, that there were links with those who were involved in the murder, a link with the BNP. And then in 1993, you see that image of that gentleman in the white, who's Dave Copeland. He was a BNP member, a neo-Nazi, who was involved in causing havoc in London in 1999, where he let off nail bombs, attacks in Brixton, Brick Lane, Soho, and many people were injured. And in Soho, four were killed. So that's three adults and one unborn child, unfortunately. So these are where the BNP have got links in with terror. So during this time in 1999, I began to work for an organization called Commission for Race Equality, which is now part of the Equality Human Rights Commission. And I was working there as a placement, as my legal background, and working in the legal team. So at the time, we were taking on predominantly cases of street violence, hate crime, but also we were looking at actually racism in the workplace, and also goods and services. At that time, around Birmingham, there were colour bars within particular nightclubs where, you know, people who looked like me couldn't get in because of, you know, because of the colour of our skin and that particular racism. So we would challenge some of these cases. So that's how I began. And then in 2002, I joined the local Race Equality Council, which was a kind of quango of the National Commission for Race Equality. But here in 2002, I joined at the time where there was a huge far right threat. And I was specifically assigned to be a hate crime caseworker. And at this time, Nick Griffin was the leader of the BNP. And Simon Darby was a deputy leader. Simon Darby was a local, Stafford, but he was a business owner in Dudley. And the BNP was founded in 1982, set up by a person who was from the Fascist National Front called John Tyndall. And then Nick Griffin took over in 1999. So initially a street thug movement, then Nick Griffin wanted to take it to another level where we're looking at getting into the electoral base. So their campaigns were looking at putting British people first, scapegoating asylum seekers and refugees. They were dividing communities and working class, stirring up hatred. There was a mosque project, which an expansion of the old mosque, Castle Hill, which needed to be expanded. And there was a lot of opposition and racism, Islamophobia around that particular project. And I'm afraid to say there were some political parties as well, other than the BNP, who were actually involved in opposing that project on a racist front. And there was kind of demonstrations between 2009 and 2016. While I was working at the Race Equality Council as a hate crime officer, we would get around six hate crime incidents per week. So these would be a kind of backlash of racial harassment incidents, attacks on places of worship, targeting asylum seekers' families, because at that particular time in 2002, Dudley was a dispersal. I don't know if you remember NASP, which is a National Asylum Support Service. They commissioned local towns to house asylum seekers and refugees coming from war-torn countries. And Dudley was one of the main dispersal areas where families would reside. And at this particular time, Simon Darby was elected the deputy leader of the BNP in Castle and Priory. Castle and Priory, along with Dudley North, was a hotspot for racist attacks, racist graffiti, verbal abuse and violence at that particular time. And I was the caseworker supporting victims of hate. And you'll see here, these are some of the racist graffiti you would see around some of these hotspot areas. And, you know, not so pleasant. And you would see that leaflet on the corner, "If only you could seek asylum." They put an old lady there, an old age pensioner called Margaret. I think she was a local lady in Dudley. I don't think she'd realised they were using, the BNP were using her image to appeal to local residents to say, actually, asylum seekers are getting properties with widescreen TVs, carpets, central heating, And, you know, whereas local residents who live in these quite deprived areas were, you know, didn't have a look in. So that caused a lot of hatred at the time. I met Simon Darby on a few occasions, as because I used to do some work with the local council. And often he'd come across as a very approachable person. But I think on one occasion there were some mutterings when he was a meeting where I got an applaud and he left the meeting. He wasn't happy that local residents at Castle and Priory, I think it was a housing residents meeting where we were talking about antisocial behaviour and other crime, where, you know, the residents were actually supporting me and my organisation and the support we did. So there's a lot of things I ran into, but the main area of what we would, so that what they would, and there's Simon Darby there in that picture. That sign was in a couple of people's houses. It says there, please display in your window. And it was actually displayed in a corner shop, which was owned by an Indian in Castle and Priory. He had no choice, he said to me when I visited his shop. If I don't put this in the window, they're going to smash my windows in. We're going to be targeted. I've got a family to support. You know, I'm going to do it. I kind of spoke to him at some length, but obviously, you know, he was very scared for his life, his family's life, and obviously his livelihood to feed his kids at the time as well. So BNP put in a quite, you know, a subtle message. Local people, you know, we're a party of common sense. We want to tackle the immigration issue, asylum seekers, illegal migrants. And we often still hear this now, this rhetoric now, don't we? So again, I know it's not got much time, but so here's just some newspaper cuttings that I was racially attacked on many occasions. I appeared in the paper. You see that slide in the middle where the BNP, that was Ken Griffiths, who was standing in Coesley, said, actually questioned, because I set up a far-right monitoring group working for the race equality. So we had unions involved in that. We had the education sector, local communities, faith organisations, where we would monitor far-right activity in schools, monitor far-right activity in communities. So I had local people who were my eyes and ears on the ground who were actually not so much undercover, but would, if they saw racist literature, if they saw stickers on lampposts, as you would see back in the day, the National Front ones, the BNP ones. But here, even they, in back in the day, they used to put razors in some of those, under some of those stickers. So if you would peel them off, you'd get cut. Unfortunately, I didn't experience any of that. But we had individuals who would then report things to me, as being the chair of the far right monitoring group, the Dudley one, and we would feed into the Midlands wide one. But we had local good people, residents of Dudley, who would support us in challenging, getting rid of racist graffiti, you know, uniting against the fight. And what we did in Dudley, you know, we part of the far right monitoring group, Searchlight, you might have heard of Hope Not Hate as well, the organization, the national. I did a lot of work with Nick Lowles back in the day, and we supported Hope Not Hate. We held fun days across Dudley, engaging the community, bringing young people together. Music, sport is a very good channel of combating racism. So we use sport, we use music, we use theatre, and to grab people. And you see from some of the comments there within the press cuttings is that actually Dudley wanted to reject the BNP. Once we dispelled some of those myths around asylum, the refugees numbers in Dudley, the fact that actually the housing that they were living in were actually not livable. Nobody else would live in them. They didn't have carpets. They didn't have central heating. I remember visiting one family of four, a really young family, were huddled around and would sleep downstairs in one of those electric small heaters. So we had to go and engage with communities, dispelling some of this myth. And these are some of the leaflets we used to counteract. We actually dug down of what some of the BNP local councillors were linked to. Some were linked to some nasty past convictions. You know, one Sandwell BNP member, so I forgot to mention that. Actually, Sandwell had five BNP councillors at one stage, which is quite scary and frightening. And then in Dudley, we had Simon Darby. So we would dispel and we would actually link them to what were they really about, what they would do if they actually got in power and continued to cause divide and hatred. And again, these are just some more leaflets that were put out in local communities. We would hold action days. So we would deliver hundreds, thousands of leaflets across the hotspot areas. So not just a far-right monitoring group, local residents, anti-racists, anti-fascists. We would go to targeted areas, leaflet. Often we would be met with hostility. I think I got punched in the face once because they were a BNP supporter. And I've actually, when I mentioned earlier, I've been targeted. I've still got scars on my back from being beaten up by the BNP whilst I was visiting victims of hate crime. And now moving on to the English Defence League, Tommy Robinson, you may have heard of. So the English Defence League were prominent in 2009. So it's a street thug movement, kind of using, not only using asylum seekers as scapegoating, but actually Islamophobic in their language and their messaging, and anti-immigrant. So they were formed in 2009 by Tommy Robinson. And they began to cause havoc across the country. I think, I can't remember, I think it was Luton, other areas, but Dudley, they saw back in 2009 and 10, thousands and thousands. I think in 2009, it was around 6,000 on their demonstration, causing absolutely havoc. I remember the build up to that, where local people were really scared and frightened, saying we're not sure what was going on in the town. And actually, during that Saturday, busy Saturday, where about six of them were causing havoc in town, innocent people, older generation community were just going out doing their normal shopping, were pushed over. You know, it was frightening at the time. I remember I was asked to speak on the counter demo, which went really successful. And you see here, we were united with our union colleagues, our anti-racist, anti-fascist colleagues, community colleagues, and faith groups as well. And so we would hold counter demonstrations every time the EDL would come to Dudley. So Dudley was a hot spot for many, many years, I think 2009 up to about 2014, where they would show up, turn up, cause hatred, cause division between communities, spreading Islamophobia. And at one stage within the EDL leadership, there was a small fraction of Sikhs that were recruited, unfortunately. And that was purposely done. That was to cause division and hatred between Muslims, Hindus and Sikhs. And the EDL were very clever, actually. They recruited a not a nice person, who's got a horrible criminal past, called Gurmjit Singh. And we formed a counter group, because we wanted to say, actually, Sikhism is not about divide and rule and Islamophobic, you know, and it's about fighting injustice, intolerance. So a Sikhs Against the EDL group was formed and has now relaunched in the light of what's happened recently. So we continue to kind of work on that movement. And these were taken at the demonstration in July this summer. So I continue to work, although obviously professionally within the health sector, but I still do a lot of work in the voluntary sector, work with the Standard to Racism in Black Country. I still do some work with the Centre for Equality and Diversity with the work I mentioned around hate crime. I'm a board member there. I work with Community Cohesion. So, you know, I'm still involved in the Black Country movement. So it's very important that we continue the fight. The far right, you'd see the civil unrest within the summer and the nasty level of rioting, what was happening on the streets, you know, people are being attacked and scapegoating again. So I really wanted to, I mean, you don't have to answer this question today, but I think there's a huge role of unions in this movement. You know, we can't do this without our union colleagues. Obviously, I'm in a union myself, but I think, you know, it's such an area that we need to continue. So have a think, maybe a bit of a discussion today if we wanted to, is how do we stand up against this far-right threat? It's not going to go away. We've got people like Farage as an MP now, And we've got the likes of Tommy Robinson. So last plea from me is there's a demonstration on the 26th of October. It's going to be a huge mobilization of anti-racists, anti-fascists to counter the far right. Because as we know, since the summer, the civil unrest, there's been a lot of following again around the far right. Tommy Robinson brought out around, I think in June, when he first did his demonstration, around 5,000 on his side, far right. And then in July, in the space of 6 weeks, they saw numbers around 15,000. 15,000 on the streets of London, where the counter demo only had around 5,000 in July, in June only around 500. You know, there was complacency around actually, will Tommy Robinson gain momentum again? Clearly, what's happening around the globe, you know, he got that. So on the 26th, Tommy Robinson and the far right are mobilizing, and I think they want to get, if not more than 15,000, or a close number. There is a counter demonstration. There's coaches going from Stand to Racism in the Black Country. If you're interested, I'm happy to pass on the details to Chris O'Neill. And in the future, Black Country, Stand to Racism. You know, you see that you've got Unite the Union here as one of the supporters as well. But locally, you know, if there's anything you can do or you want, there's a Stand to Racism forum and a group that a Black Country we meet on a regular basis. If you wanted to be part of that, then you're more than welcome. Happy to take any questions or comments as well. So thank you again, Neil, and thank you, Chris, for inviting me today.
Thanks for listening. Our music comes from Raja FFM. It's called Trash the Disco, and it's under a Creative Commons license. You can find it on ccmixter.org. Thanks for listening. Our music comes from Raja FFM. It's called Trash the Disco, and it's under a Creative Commons license. You can find it on ccmixter.org.